Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. As you know, we are now going to go into part two of our show, dealing with the question of racial bias, possibly in the school and in the classroom. Last week, when we started this series, I asked people to, in particular teachers, to call in. Didn't get any while we were on the air, but I found out as soon as we got off the air, but there were two people who made attempts to call, one who called after the show was over, one who perhaps pushed the wrong button, and instead of going to being able to listen and interact, they were only able to listen. So that was, I think, what happened. I did get some comments during the week and latest today from teachers thanking me for bringing up the issue or taking it on, as they said. And just not too long ago, maybe a couple of hours ago, I got a message that stated that whereas I didn't get any direct comments on the War Report, at least that I saw, or on my personal page, on other Facebook group pages, there were tons, and they tell me tons of responses, comments, and I'm told also that a lot of it was negative, going from accusing me of being a racist or practicing racism to whatever else. And I mention it, but I won't comment because I'm going to do a third part next week. And probably then I will comment, but for now, no. Having said that, let's get into today's show. What I'm going to try and do today is we're going to go back a little bit over that statement that was part of our promotion that basically says that to be born white in America, to be socialized, to grow up in America, you are inescapably a racist. And I presented that as a premise that exists, and I want to go back a little bit on that today and then go into some of the, quote, data that has been produced that would support that argument. Back to the premise itself, and I'm going to repeat some of the things I said last time, but also hopefully take it a little deeper, maybe possibly a little different direction. The statement basically says that the culture and the history of this country is such that if you are born white of any social class, any religion, any gender, and you are raised in this culture, then you will not be able to escape the racism that is so embedded within the culture. It's everywhere in American culture. All of our institutions, the family, the church, education, government, the economy, the all of any society, the major social institution. And that in saying this, it's almost like a neutral statement, a matter-of-fact type statement. It doesn't say that you are good or bad, although the term racist is negative. But basically, that's the statement. And the premise behind it is that, again, we have 400-plus years of the existence of this country. And as I mentioned last week, from the very beginning, going back to Columbus, and he wrote in his journals that the natives that he came across were so kind, so generous, but they are also so easily conquered that just give him 50 to 75 soldiers, they could conquer the entire nation. That was a perception that Europeans had of other people. And also remember going back then that Europeans didn't know about Asia in any great detail until Marco Polo, I think, started making reports or giving reports about what he was discovering in China. How much they knew about Africa, how much they knew about the other continents. It's not, well, I guess if you're a historian, maybe it may be well understood. But back to this country, from the very first settlers, English settlers coming here, they brought with them notions of racial differences based upon the limited experience they had had in by the early 1400s. And they brought their customs, their practices, and all of those customs and practices had embedded in it, especially in England, notion of superiority, that the English was more superior than the French, the Spanish, the Portuguese, you name it, this notion of superiority. So when you take that and you add then racial differences as well as nationality differences, you can begin to understand the foundation upon which this premise is built. And you take it further that we are all social beings and that we are a product of male-female interaction in terms of starting the birth process. We're born into either a family of two parents, one parent, brothers and sisters, etc., and we're dependent upon the others to nurture us physically. If not, we die. So that if the family in which you're born in, the community in which you're born in, and the social institutions within that community have this value of racial, cultural superiority, yes, it is quite likely, it is more than probable that you will grow up embracing those same values, attitudes, policies, actions. And it doesn't matter as an adult or even as a teenager or young adult what profession you go in, be it teaching, policing, government, law, medicine. The issue is if you were socialized into that matrix of values and policies and practices, fantastic chance that you may be a person who houses those same values, those same practices and beliefs of your superiority. You may not recognize it because it's so endemic to the culture. Now, if you happen to be born in a family that does not embrace that value of racial superiority, and you are taught or socialized from birth on not to buy into this racial superiority, yes, then, and especially by the time you get to school, there's a good possibility that your personality, as Freud would say, personalities are developed by age 7. Your personality may be such by then that you have a shield that filter out the racism that is embedded throughout the culture. So the statement, all white people who and black people who are born in America are racist. And I throw in this black part because I guess it was 2 days ago, as I've been doing research on this all the time, I ran across a YouTube something. What do you call YouTube? A video on YouTube. And it was a conversation between the moderator and Henry Louis Gates. Dr. Henry Louis Gates, he is a perhaps the most recognized, quote, black studies scholar in America. He's a professor at Harvard. He's a director of a major, big-time research center that studies African-American experience. And so he was saying that black folks are racist as well. And if you go back to the slave period, that it was the Africans who captured other Africans and sold them to the Europeans. And then he went on and on and on, but at the very end, he quoted his friend, Cornel West. And he said, Cornel West says that basically he used the term recovered racist. No, he says basically we are all racist. And the best we could be are recovered racist. If you remember, I said that last week, that it was in a conversation that I had with one of my colleagues at my first couple of weeks at UCLA that said that all white people were racist and the very best that a white person could be was a recovered racist. I had not heard that from anyone else in, what, 40 years that I heard it, maybe a bit, a little longer, and till Friday. And I just had to mention that because that really caught me by surprise. So this theory that if you're white and you're born in America, you can't help from being racist. Now, think about this. Being a teacher, being a white teacher, does being a teacher make you exceptional in terms of not having racial biases? Because there is the presumption that teachers can't be racist. They can't take racial biases into their classroom, into their schools, because teachers are exceptional. They're different. So that statement that I started the show with last week and this week, that white people born and raised in this country are so exposed to racism throughout their entire lives that the question of whether or not white teachers can be, are, have been racist. And that is the crux of all of this, because as I said earlier, there's this prevailing view that white teachers are exceptional, are an exception to this rule, if it is a rule, that all white people are racist. Remember, I questioned the all. I have some cognitive dissonance with that part of the statement, the all. But for teachers, however, I can see how this supposedly applies, and that's what we're talking about, and that's what, if you're a teacher, depending on where you are, north, south, east, west, doesn't Midwest, it really doesn't matter. It's calling you out in the sense that, and this came from a teacher, a white teacher, as I mentioned, in Kansas, that you are no exception. If you're a white person, you're no exception because you were a teacher. You're a racist. Now, let's move on to what's really the focus for this week, and that is, I call it data. Some would call it evidence. I'll call it data. There have been tons and tons of research, tons and tons of opinions, articles published in professional journal or academic journals, published in by organizations who are affiliated with education, and you name it, raising this question, maybe not directly, but commenting on the implication of that statement, that white teachers are no exception to being racist as a result of being born and raised in this country. And the data is quite extensive. I can start off by talking about studies that was published not just recently from Johns Hopkins, and that was widely publicized in newspapers across the country. The Hopkins study was very, very interesting because it specifically set out to question this, whether or not there's a difference between white teachers, or they put it, white teachers, non-white teachers, or black teachers in terms of their racial biases. And according to the study, and I said this is a Johns Hopkins study that was mentioned, or the study itself came out a little later than what I'm about to say, but March of this year, March 3rd to be exact, the Johns Hopkins University study came out, and it's race biases, teachers' expectation for students. And some of the things that they found that white, other than black teachers, were 12 percentage points more likely than black teachers to predict black students wouldn't finish high school. Also, non-black teachers were 5% more likely to predict black boys, black male students, wouldn't graduate from high school than black girls. In other words, black boys were far more likely not to graduate from high school than black girls or females. Okay. White male teachers were 10 to 20% more likely to have low expectation of blacks than black teachers, and particularly black female teachers. On the other hand, black female teachers are significantly more optimistic about the ability of black boys to complete high school than teachers of any other racial, ethnic group. They were 20% less likely to predict that their students, their black students, these were black female teachers, was 20% less likely to predict that their black students wouldn't graduate from high school, and 30% less likely to say that than even male black teachers. Let me go back and maybe put that more clarity to it. Black female teachers had a more favorable view of black students than white students, a more favorable view than white male students, male teachers, and more favorable view of their students than even black male teachers. What really got me from this study was that the implications that they, the researchers themselves, stated at the very end of the article. And they said that for black students, particularly black males, having a non-black teacher in a 10th grade, in any 10th grade subject, made them less likely to pursue that subject by enrolling in similar classes in the future. Let me say that again, that if you were a black male student in the 10th grade and you were not exposed to a black teacher teaching any of the subjects for that grade, you were less likely to pursue that subject in any other classes. And they concluded by suggesting that bias expectations by teachers have a long-term effect on student outcomes. I'm silent because I want that to sink in. And when they're talking about outcomes, it's not just outcomes as it relates to school and being successful in school or even finishing school. They're talking about going to college. They're also talking about being successful in whatever employment that you have. They're talking about the increased possibility of being incarcerated. That statement was pretty heavy, but true. And I'm going to put what I just said on our page later today so that you can see it for yourself. And I may even also try and put some of the other stuff that I'm going to talk about on our page later today. Now, there are other studies that talk about expectation and teachers' expectation, but they also talk about teachers' expectation and students' ability to perceive teachers' expectation and how this perception impacts the students. And how the parents of said students, black and Hispanic parents, also perceive that white teachers have lower expectation of their students' both ability, motivation, and likelihood of succeeding both in their class and graduating and in life. Now, as I point these things out, I'm pointing out the data. And if you trust in data, then you can start drawing your own conclusions or raising your own questions. What I'm hoping that I'm doing is raising questions among our teachers, much like the inquiry-based approach to curriculum and instruction, much like the project-based approach to curriculum and instruction, how we get students, especially K through 12 students, more engaged if we use project or inquiry or big concept approach to curriculum construction and instruction, classroom instruction. That's what I'm hoping here, is that, you know, even raising the topic, absent of not having a dialogue with any of you, but raising the topic itself will cause people to start raising questions, maybe even go further, start inquiring. And that if they do, they will start inquiring at the self level. And then how about other colleagues? How about administration? How about the school district itself? And we know we match that with the larger society. So there you have it. Even Hillary Clinton, I just ran across this a couple of days ago. Teachers, race, and school discipline. That is an area where there's a lot of data all suggesting the following, that the connection between school and the prison pipeline is largely fueled by teachers, admins, racial biases. A lot of data on that subject. Recall, wasn't it February 2014 that the U.S. Department of Education, and I think it was the Justice Department as well, sent letters out to every school district in the country telling them that in their disciplinary policies and practices to not use racial biases to use to expel, to suspend, basically to punish students of color differently than they do white students. You remember that? Even Obama came out and made public statements about it. And what they were referring to is that the data on school to prison pipeline is consistent. It's from the South, the East, West, Midwest, North, that particularly black boys, and now evidence is piling up that black girls are all being, and both also for Hispanics too, are all being victimized by differential racial policies and practices that aim to punish black students, Hispanic students, male and female, and that this constitute racial discrimination that could be to bring suits. And I mentioned Hillary Clinton because very recently Clinton even mentioned it. One of the few things that she talked about in terms of her, quote, ed platform, if she has an ed platform, she says that it's not a school or education issue, this school-to-prison pipeline and this differential impact of school policies, admin policies, teachers' practices that adversely impact students of color more than white students. She said it's not an educational issue. It's a civil rights issue. So I've talked about school-to-prison pipeline my first year, second year, earlier this year, and this is one of the areas where the question of racial biases among teachers really plays out. It's glaring. It jumps out. And remember, I can't remember whether it's not my first or my second year on the air. I mentioned that when I was growing up, and most likely when most of you were growing up, that there was a high premium put on individuals, teachers, classroom management skills and ability. And that classroom teachers were expected to be able to handle any discipline problems in their room. And teachers would have you write on the board, I will not do this, or go sit in the corner, go in the cloakroom. And if it was really, really, really bad, they had you stand outside in the hallway. And that was, well, you didn't want that to happen. Now, teachers, and I use this term, teachers are put in the role to be gatekeepers to initiate the school-to-prison pipeline process. Because it's the teachers who are to call the resource personnel, which is another word for saying cops in schools, and call the principals, who then call the resource personnel or the local police, and that it is the teacher's judgment, the teacher's response to what he or she perceive as disruptive behavior, unacceptable, inappropriate behavior, and how he or she now responds to that via calling in outsiders being people outside of the classroom, to deal with this behavior that, you know, we as teachers decades ago handled ourselves. And so this is where racial biases can come in. And I think of a couple examples where a young female, black female student came to school wearing either dreadlocks or hair in an African motif, told to, you can't do that at this school. She refused to change, boom. She's arrested. I can think of other examples where a young kid in the school cafeteria dropped something on the floor. He was told by the cops that in the school to clean it up. He did, but he didn't do it to their satisfaction. Boom, handcuffed, sent to the precinct. These are, of course, minority students I'm talking about. And I'm thinking about articles that I've read that have pointed out the fact that black students, and when I say black students, other groups as well, Hispanics, particularly. They do something. They get disciplined, sometimes extremely harshly, whereas a white student doing the same thing, they get counseling. One goes to jail, one goes to counseling. What am I saying here? Since I mentioned this last week, since 80, and some now are saying 83% of the nation's teaching force are white, and this disparity is going to continue to grow in terms of white versus non-white teachers, whereas we have reached a point where the majority of students, and particularly urban centers, are students of color. And as I mentioned last week, what's the potential, and I use the word potential, impact of this inverse relationship? If white teachers are indeed carrying their conscious and unconscious biases into the classroom, into these urban schools where they have majority, if not total students, 100% in their classroom, in their schools that are minorities, and they have these biases, what is the potential impact as it relates to the school-to-prison pipeline, relationship to teachers' perception of the student in terms of their ability and their worth, and whether or not these racial biases, if they exist, will further impact the school-to-prison pipelines, further impact the perception of these kids are not smart, these kids, no matter what you do, they're not going to get it because they're not, quote, as a group or individually smart, and hence my expectations are low. And then I see all your behavior with from that prism of my biases. This is where I think most of the studies that I've come across are in this area of the school to prison pipeline and raising the question of racial biases in policy and practice as carried out by teachers, carried out by admins, as carried out by boards, and as carried out by local communities. Again, I will try and put some of this on a board, or at least one study or story or whatever from each of these areas on the War Report website, Facebook page, so that you can see some of this for yourself and ponder it. Another area here is the difference in the way male black students and female black students are treated, and that the difference in treatment is also ascribed to racial biases. The theory goes, the research suggests that, of course, black males are perceived as more threatening, perceived as being violent prone, more than females, and then hence they elicit responses from teachers and admins that are more quickly levied on them and more harsh than black female students and, of course, white males, white students. That's something also we need to think about here as it relates to what we're talking about. And this phenomena of whether or not white teachers have cultural, quote, racial biases. The evidence, the data, suggests that it shows up even in preschools. Three-year-olds, four-year-olds, kindergartners are not given a pass from these racial biases. And that there are reports of incidents where preschoolers, and I'm kind of laughing because it's such a horrific thing, preschoolers, black students, are also suspended, expelled at a higher rate in preschool, kindergarten folks, than white students. And that this perception of black male students as being violent prone carries over to preschoolers. Preschoolers. I remember when I was getting home back to Los Angeles in August from another road trip. I was talking to two of my friends, neighbors on my block. It's a white couple, husband and wife. And I was telling them some of the stuff that I'm finding and da-da-da-da. And I talked about this one incident where a preschooler, 4 years old, was cuffed, put in the back seat of a police car, and taken to the station. The guy, he didn't go off on me, but it was like, you're lying, you're bullshitting me, you're making this shit up. And this is a guy, person who's known me for, what, I don't know, 10 years or so. And his wife was looking at him as if, you can't be serious in terms of saying that James is lying, he's making this up, or that this doesn't happen, sort of thing. And I looked at him, didn't say anything, but basically, everything that I'm telling you here is well documented. Everything that I tell other people is well documented. But yes, it pervades even preschools, these biases. And again, the impact that the, remember the my road trips, I was looking at the impact of the war on public education on teachers, students, parents, community activists, whole communities, etc. The word impact, the effect. Well, it applies to what we're talking about now. The impact, the effect on the children could be everlasting. So this makes this some really, really serious, heavy, heady things that we're talking about here. And we're laying it at the foot of teachers. Again, I hesitate because I want you to take that in. And again, no one has called in to discuss, defend, or whatever, what I'm saying here in terms of the issue itself that I'm disappointed in, but it is what it is. Now, if we look further at the data, the question of expectations, I mentioned it before, but even, remember George Bush, Bush 2, when he came out with No Child Left Behind, he often spoke about low expectation that teachers pad of students. He didn't specifically, to my knowledge, he didn't specifically come out and say, white teachers have this low expectation of minority students, and that that is contributing to the achievement gap between white and non-white students. But no child left behind, race to the top. They all use that theory, that premise, to explain why their programs are the way they are. That low achievement, your achievement gap, is as much a product of teachers. And again, when I say teachers, when the majority of teachers are white, than anything else, as well as teachers are incompetent and on and on and on. But you see here that there are many, many ways in which this notion of cultural biases creeps into the ed picture. And another way, which is to me indicative of at least embracing this question of whether or not white teachers are culturally biased, is what I mentioned last week, and that is the proliferation of programs, college, at the college and at the graduate, undergraduate, graduate level, and now at the district level, programs that, quote, as I mentioned last week, they don't come out and say we are directly dealing with this issue of whether or not our teachers, code word for white teachers, are culturally, racially biased. But what they do is they're offering classes, they're offering programs that under the banner of cultural competency, cultural diversity, going back even to multicultural education, that is, again, code words for dealing with racial biases. Is it a recognition on the part of these colleges and universities and districts that there is this thing called racial biases in their teachers, and that they must deal with it either in pre-service or in service under teacher development? I learned just, I think it was today or Sunday, I just learned 2 days ago, that here in Buffalo, they're inaugurating a teacher competency, but they call it something else. Oh, cultural responsiveness program. And I mentioned one of the universities here in Buffalo, they're inaugurating a master's degree called Urban Education Studies. And I also have just recently discovered that there are other school districts that are starting, or maybe have already started, the teacher development programs whereby they seek to deal with this neutral cultural bias. They don't call it racial, they call it cultural bias in the classroom, in the school. And some of the programs are saying, well, it's not just teacher cultural biases, it's also community or parents' cultural biases, and that we need to bridge the gap between the two groups and we can do it with this cultural responsiveness development program that we are using. So when you look at the big picture and you see this data, I don't know, and maybe you may want to just blame it on me, but it is so much saying that there is something to this notion of cultural racial biases and our teachers. To what extent? No one is saying. Some of are saying all teachers, like that tagline that we use and promoting the show. Some are saying a large percentage. Some are saying we don't know, but we believe that it's there. So this is the, when I said talking about the theory, now the data or the evidence, this is what I'm talking about. You look at what is going on, something over here, something over there, something here, that you can say it's a response to this notion of cultural racial biases in the classroom. Too much is happening, and within the last few years, an explosion of the various kinds of activities that I just mentioned are popping up. That to ignore it would be, I don't know, again, back to the ostrich and head in the sand thing, that there are people who believe that this is real and that it should be, must be dealt with. That part of our promotion that said, our promo that said, should all teachers be trained, is dealing with what I saw and just mentioned to you. That too many places are quietly coming up with these programs. At the Ivy League, major state universities like the UCLA's that I'm very familiar with, Wayne State University where I went to and taught, down to small private universities and colleges, now school districts that I'm finding out about. And I'm also finding out that as early as 2001, 2, 3, 4, some teachers were getting this cultural responsive training. Yeah, that far back. And that for some of them, it has impacted them and to the point where some are saying it changed their lives forever, because it brought out things about themselves that they had no idea they were harboring and was practicing. So, teachers, what do you think? Could it be that teachers are not exceptional in the sense that they too can harbor conscious and unconscious cultural racial biases, and that these biases in the classroom and have major impact? Well, our time is up, and I will do a part 3 next week on this, and I probably then will give my views, my opinions on this, and I'll talk about some of the responses that I'm hearing that people have voiced over me even bringing up this subject and talking about it. So until then, have a good one. See you next week. Thank you.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.